Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is James Jordan, and this is a brand new episode of Gaming Uncensored. Tommy's sitting over there, and we are not infected.
We hope. Yeah, who knows at this point.
It
feels like we're kind of in a video game in the making, you know?
It's like
it's about to be The Last of Us. Like, that's about to happen.
I don't even want to think about that. Like, there are things in this world that I know I don't want to see, and a clicker is one of them.
Isn't that the
like,
truth? My
goodness. I don't need that.
Yeah.
Like, there's some freaky stuff I think I can handle. A clicker is not one.
That is the truth, man. So, glad you're alive, though. That's a good thing to be true right now.
I'm alive. I'm coughing. I have the cough that will not die. it just will not go away. That's all that's wrong with me. Of course, I can't go out in public because if you're out in public and you're coughing, people think you're infected. And that's not good. So I have not been out of my house. I have not seen anybody. I have not done anything. And true to West Texas, you're going to get a kick out of this. Everything is shut down, right? Except my church, right? Like,
that sounds about right.
Okay, so my pastor has this theory that if Walmart is open, we are open, right? So Sunday, my parents go and they prepare to play to a small crowd. Because we thought the number was going to be 10 in one place, right? So we were setting up to have multiple buildings with people in them. And we were going to stream where we needed to go. So I did not go because I had this cough. And that didn't make a lot of sense. So I stayed home. I said, if you need something, I'll remote in. So I'm watching the service before they start. And I'm thinking to myself, man, that's a lot of people. Turns out, like 50 people showed up. Nice. And they had like sections of the sanctuary cordoned off where like, people could sit, and you sit here, and you sit here, and you sit here. Everybody was sitting in one section. I'm like, you people are going to get everybody infected. It's all going to be over. It's going to be the church's fault. That's it. I'm glad I'm home and not there. So, yeah, welcome to West Texas, where God trumps everything.
Fair enough.
So we all know what's been going on. We're all bummed out. You've been working. I've been trying to work. But I've been playing a lot of video games. Finished The Outer Worlds, which is fantastic. And then when that was over, I started looking for something else to play. And I had The Walking Dead Season 5.
Nice.
I go to Quicket, and it decides not to boot. I'm like, well, that sucks. And next to it is Deus Ex Mankind Divided, which I never finished. So I click it, and I start playing. It's been 3 days, and I've done nothing but that. That thing has been on my system since 2015. And I have to tell you something, sir. It's going to make you laugh. You know how we did our top 10 franchises a few months back?
Uh-huh.
Now that I've played The Outer Worlds, and now that I'm back on Mankind Divided, I have to tell you, the Deus Ex franchise is one of the best RPG franchises ever made. And I say this because I just finished The Outer Worlds, and I get back into this game from 2015, and I realize that it does things similarly to The Outer Worlds. The difference is that it's bigger. There's more stuff going on. It's just a more fleshed out title, and it has that same feel. And so I'm looking at our top 10 going, it's not in the top 10, but it's an honorable mention. It's really good.
That's fair. It's that, man, it's one of those things that it just, if I had more time, obviously, that's so high on my list of a franchise I would love to play that I've just never really spent time with.
I've been begging you for like 5 years.
I know.
And I'm,
for most of the life of this show.
I'm telling you, dude, it is so good. Like
I believe you.
Like I jumped in and started playing, and I was like, I'll probably not know where I'm at. I'll probably not know what's going on. I knew exactly what was going on. Picked it right up. I hadn't done anything but that for 3 days. And it is so well put together.
Nice.
The only knock I would say is probably the animations and some of the cutscenes and some of that stuff. But it is really good, and it's very, what makes it so good, and I've talked about this before with Cabbage, is there's 18 different ways to do everything, and so it works out really well for a crippled such as myself that has trouble getting around different places. So sure. I really enjoyed doing that. That's a lot of fun. I will play it to the end. The way that I'm playing games right now, I'll probably finish it this week. Because, let's face it, there's nothing else to do. So I'm having a good time right now on an RPG bender. And I have Disco Elysium up after that.
Very
and
nice.
The Witcher and whatever else you want to throw in there. Like, if the world continues to be at an end and we are still here in May, I'll still have stuff to play.
There you go.
That's how crazy it is.
Yeah.
So now that I've told you all that, I want to know what you've been playing, because I know you've been playing as well.
Yeah, it's we've been saying for years now it's a good time to be a gamer. I would say it's especially a good time to be a gamer right now in what are otherwise not good times, just because it's a really nice outlet. And all of a sudden, a lot of people are figuring that out. There's a lot of new gamers coming in. And so we'll see. I would anticipate we'll get a little bit of a boost on this show, too, with some new people kind of wondering. By the way, I haven't even mentioned this to you. I haven't mentioned that to anybody else either. We are on Spotify now, officially on Spotify. So if you listen to podcasts on Spotify and want to listen to us over there, there you go. Or if you just randomly found us on Spotify, welcome to the show. This is us.
Well, I'm not surprised by that, because I've been lurking in the email and I did see that. And nice. it only took us like 6 years to get on to Spotify.
It was really difficult for a while, and then I tried again, and then we were like, "Cool, here you go," and off we went. So that's good news. And really quickly on that same train of thought, and then I'll jump into a few games I've been playing. Thanks to our Patreon guys: Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, and Sam. If you want to participate on Patreon, go by gaminguncensored.com, click to become a patron link there near the top of the page. There is content over there, because we played a game last week. We did some Zelda finally again. It's been a long time since we had done some Zelda, and so that was thoroughly enjoyable, and so something I know we've both played. That was a blast, and I'm looking forward to more of that too over the next few weeks.
And we're still lame.
We've not gotten better.
We're not good at all.
We're not.
I really feel like every time we fire it up, when it's over, we should just hand in our gamer cards.
Yes.
And just say, that's it. It's over.
It is pretty embarrassing that we make that available to the world to see just exactly how bad of gamers we are. But it's really enjoyable.
And
we're having
a
good time.
What's crazier to me is that people keep paying for it.
Yeah. Like, God bless you.
Like, I don't understand that at all. Real quick, while we're talking about the Patreon guys, Sam, you heard what I just said about Deus Ex. This one's for you, buddy. That you need to spend some time. I'm telling you, go get it. It's like $4 on Steam for every game. The two new ones are prequels, and the OG, the original that stole my soul for years, is the not the last one in the series, but it's the two new ones are prequels, so you can play them first and then go to that. And I will tell you, sir, the original is still good. Thank you, Warren Spector, because he sucks me back in about every 5 years. So, Sam, or anybody else that's listening, if you need a good RPG, it's really good. Really, really good. So, yeah.
Fair. Really quickly, I mentioned, I guess not on the last show, when we played Zelda, I mentioned this, so this will be news to everybody that hasn't seen that video yet. I've been playing Ori and the Blind Forest, or Ori and the Will of the Wisps, the new Ori. And so that's been a big chunk of my gaming, which we went on and on about Ori and the Blind Forest, and the new one is every bit as good. I mentioned on that video, I do think it's a little easier. I've gotten to a few more challenging points in the game, but I just remember dying so much in the original. This one, I die a fair amount, but not quite as much, which I don't hate, because the first one was pretty tough, and so I'm not totally opposed to it being a little bit easier. This one has a little bit more robust of a system of kind of perks, almost. It's a good way to look at them, that you can kind of customize how your gameplay works a little bit. And so I've been able to like get some, you know, a little bit of a boost in life because of that and that kind of stuff that makes it a little bit more manageable, which is probably why I feel that way. But again, it has that same balance. It's super kind of Metroidvania platformer, lots of action. You unlock abilities as you move through. You go back to places you've been before. All the kind of Metroidvania stuff, but with these amazingly beautiful visuals and this kind of gut-wrenching story that goes along with it. And so, yeah, I can't recommend that one enough. And if you have Game Pass, you already have it.
Yeah, it's not any extra. I was about to say, thank you, Game Pass.
It's amazing. I just dig that.
I've been playing, kind of tinkering with Gears of War on Game Pass again as well. So, for as much as we complain, Game Pass is awesome. We don't own games anymore, and you know what? I don't care.
Yep.
I wish I cared, but I really don't.
Yeah. Once the services are good enough that it's workable, then which they are at this point. Yep. It's how I play games, and it's great. It's specifically just a little bonus perk for me. This is the first game that like Genevieve like wants to like play with me. Like she'll come over. So I have the Stadia controller because I, you know, we did the Stadia Founders bundle or whatever, and it shut that down because they just don't have software at this point to really justify it. But I have this controller. So now I have this controller that's not really being used for anything. And so I just hand her the Stadia controller, and then I'm using an Xbox controller to play it on my PC. And she'll come up to me, you know, just like while I'm working and be like, game, I want to play game. And I'm like, well, if you insist, you know, like I have to pay attention to my daughter. So I guess I'll stop working for a little bit to sacrifice and play Ori and the Will of the Wisp for
Man,
a little bit. But
she, that's a tough wife right there.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. It's rough. it's the one perk so far of quarantine is just getting to play games with my daughter, who's a little over two. I think most people know listening to the show. I've heard enough about her at this point, but just to that point where she's just starting to kind of like sit and watch and kind of get into it and following along and was like, I'm making him run, you know, like she's saying that she's doing stuff. And so, yeah, she's a gamer in the making. She's going to be playing really, really soon, probably before we're able to get out of the house on a regular basis. And so that's super fun. I'm really pumped about that. And then the other thing I'll mention that I've been playing, I haven't put a ton of time into this yet, but enough to at least mention it here, is Animal Crossing. I decided to jump on the bandwagon and pick up Animal Crossing with everybody else that's quarantined, because this game came out at the exact right time. It is the craziest thing that Animal Crossing came out when it did, when everybody's looking for a virtual escape from their, you know, sitting in their house all day. Nintendo's life simulator that's super chill, just about living on an island and like catching butterflies and building stuff and whatever, is just right now. And so it's yeah, it's pretty great. Again, the reviews are pretty high across the board. And you get why when you play it. It's a Nintendo title. It has that level of Nintendo polish to it. We've talked about Stardew Valley a ton on the show, and of course, Animal Crossing was doing that even before Stardew Valley was doing that. But to me, like Stardew Valley had such a hold on me for such a long time, and I still go back to it. I play it on my phone on a fairly regular basis. And this is just that same kind of thing. And so if you haven't played Animal Crossing in the past, if you're like me and got really into Stardew Valley, you're going to jump into Animal Crossing and feel great about it, because it's a very just similar kind of chill experience. You're not trying to accomplish, you know, you got tasks and kind of quest type things. There's RPG-ish elements to it. But it's, you know, it's like a super chill vibey game in a time where super chill vibey games are really nice.
And like, I can't believe that we're in this space where there's literally nothing to do. There's no live music. There's not a lot on TV. There's just not a lot going on. And we're finally in a space where we're like, hey, we're gamers. This is what we do. And we have a license to do that. Like, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, well, I guess it's time to fire something up. So it's amazing.
It's a super bizarre time, but there are little silver linings to it, which is nice. So.
Accessibility Controller 3.0 is here.
Oh, yeah.
It's done. It is ready to rock. However, I have not touched it because I've learned I have two problems. It does not plug into the PlayStation 4 by default. So sure. I'm trying to figure that out. That's not real easy, apparently. And I am desperately in need of a Steam Link because I should be playing lots and lots of games on that. But I've learned that playing games on a 24-inch computer monitor when you're way back from it is not fun. So
yeah,
I gotta find a Steam Link or an HDMI cable or something. I can't get either one of those because nobody has been to my house. like, I've not seen my brother in 3 weeks. It's that the controller is sitting on my island. Thanks to the guys, Ken and the other guys at Warfighter Engage, for putting that together. It's going to be awesome when you and I get together in June, hopefully, because we got something to play with.
Yes.
So
I am pumped about that as well. It's super exciting. And so, big thanks to Ken and the guys. It's amazing. That's super, super cool.
And
all that
I was going to say, we're going to have them on the show at some point here.
Absolutely.
So I'm looking forward to that.
100%. All that said, should we talk about some news?
Absolutely.
Really quick rundown. We didn't do it at the beginning of the show. So really quick rundown of what we got today. Big news, probably biggest thing that's happened since last we did a show. Well, other than the virus, we're going to talk about that and its impact on gaming as well. But for a moment, we'll pretend like that wasn't a thing, even though the thing we're going to talk about happened in the way it happened because of the virus. Blah, 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 whatever. Sony released specs about the PlayStation 5. And so we'll dig into that and how it compares to the Xbox Series X, now that we have a good sense of kind of what they look like side by side, which is fascinating, and I'm super pumped about both these consoles. It's gonna be good. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about some of the fallout of E3 being canceled. We haven't technically talked about that on the show, but that did officially happen. We knew it would, and so we'll talk about some of the alternate plans that some of these publishers have in place. GDC has a potential new date. We'll talk about that, and then lots of little game things. Announcements, rumors, that kind of stuff we'll get into as well if we have time. But we're going to spend some time talking about PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. So on one day last week, who knows, days just run together. Yes. At this point, you know?
Like I woke up this morning, I'm like, what day is it?
I have no clue.
No idea.
I have to teach classes on certain days, and so I'm like, oh, man, I need to be aware just so I don't accidentally miss a class that I have to teach remotely now from my this exact place that I'm sitting right now doing the show is where I'm teaching my classes from now. But just being aware of that is super important. So anyway, one day last week, Mark Cerny from Sony did a presentation that was originally scheduled to be at GDC, I believe. And so it's a pretty tech heavy and isn't like, I think a lot of people, when they heard the news that Sony was doing an event, they were like, oh, we're going to see lots of gameplay. We're going to see, you know, big announcement. And it wasn't that. It was much more like technical PowerPoint kind of presentation, more sophisticated, not much, maybe was PowerPoint, of the hardware, and specifically why they think it's a big deal. It got very, very techy. There's lots of technical jargon as part of it. And so for some people, that's a big turnoff, and I get that. We'll see it soon enough. We're going to see what it can do. But that's not what we got out of this.
I love tech. I really do. Like, tech is one of my favorite things. I listened to about 25 minutes of this and went, yeah, I'm done. I don't, like,
it's fair.
I had no time for this because dude was, first of all, I'm like, the guys at Sony, I love you, but y'all be weird. Yeah. Y'all, like, I just, he steps up there and I swear to you folks, it's Dana Carvey.
He does look a lot like Dana Carvey.
And sounds like Dana Carvey. Like, oh my like, God. It's yeah. freaking me out, man. It was just bizarre.
Yeah, that's fair. I love it because he's like just total nerd and embraces that like to the fullest. It's like this kind of, you know, like it's this technical presentation with a lot of details that aren't necessarily... Again, super exciting, super sexy to look at. It had this weird, like, they had silhouettes of people since they couldn't have an actual event. So there's these weird, like, fake kind of silhouettes that move every once in a while. And just, the whole thing was a little weird in how they presented it. But I love the fact that Mark Cerny just buys into the nerdiness of it so much and just was, like, giddy the whole time to be talking about number of threads and processors and all this fun stuff. So all that said, we'll hit kind of the highlights really quick, and then I think the more interesting thing here is just kind of looking at how it stacks up against what we know about the Series X so far. And so the highlights are it's a pretty powerful piece of hardware, the GPU is capable of 10.28 teraflops, and so that's a little bit less than what the Series X is at 12 teraflops that we talked about recently. It's obviously not the only thing that matters. We'll get into some of the other differences, but it's a huge upgrade, obviously, of what the current generation is. And so just on pure graphical power, it's going to be a big step up, as you would expect. It will have a slightly less than 1 terabyte solid state drive. This is an interesting choice, and he talked about it a little bit of trying to find this kind of magic number. It's an 825 gig solid state drive, but it's a beast of a solid state drive, like unheard of performance as far as the drive goes. He was talking about how he actually thinks developers are going to have to work to slow stuff down on the drive because it's so fast, and just the way that games have been developed to work around processors or hard drive speeds, that they might have to like actually work in the opposite a little bit. That's obviously a bunch of kind of like good Sony spin for them, but it is a beast of a processor. It will have a speed of 5.5 gigabytes per second, which is fairly insane. It's twice that of what the Xbox Series X solid state drive is, and just about any solid state drive on the market at this point. Also, we'll have an expandable slot that you can install your own drive into it. What is it? An M5, right?
M2.
M2. Yes. I don't know why I've got M5 on my head. You could install your own M2 drive into it. However, big caveat here is that M2 drive has to function at the same performance specs of the built-in solid-state drive, and currently those don't really exist on the market. And Mark Cerny was talking about how he's optimistic that they will soon, but maybe not at launch. And so 825 gigs is a decent size, but you're going to fill that up pretty quick with games that are going to take, you know, a few hundred gigs, which is going to be pretty standard, I think, in next gen. You're going to fill that up pretty quickly, and so if you want that expandable storage, there's an option for it. There's an M2 slot on the back that you can just slide it into. But again, they're probably going to be pretty pricey and not readily available at the launch of this thing. So, 16 gigs of RAM. That's same thing as the Series X, though. The PlayStation 16 gigs of RAM is overall a little bit slower. The Series X divvies it out in a few different ways. We'll get into that maybe more here in a little bit. They talked a lot about a kind of new process for frequencies for the CPU and the GPU, that there'll actually be variable frequency drives. And so he talked about, instead of being a constant frequency, they're going to work to make it run at a constant power, and that the frequency will adjust to that. So when it's kind of maxed out, when it's running at its highest speeds, it'll be 3.5 gigahertz. Again, compare that to the Series X, which is a 3.8 gigahertz, comes in a little bit under that. But they really did talk up the whole idea of this variable frequency thing, that they're going to think it's going to be a big game changer and a big help for developers. We'll see if that's the case. And so I'm trying to think. He talked a lot about the kind of audio engine, which is where I really nerded out, because it was getting into a world that I actually know some stuff about. Some of the technical jargon there was fun. The long and short of it is they're just working to make more immersive audio of using things like ambisonics to create real kind of living audio spaces that are going to match spatially really well with what's on the screen. They talked about that in terms of VR and how that's such an important thing in VR, but also bringing that to just playing on a normal screen, which is a good thing. Otherwise, I don't think there was those were the big things as far as the hardware goes. And so what we learned is it's going to be a beast of a rig, and in most ways it's slightly less than a beast than the Xbox Series X. The Series X has a faster GPU, more teraflops, faster CPU, is going to have slightly faster RAM. The PlayStation 5 has that slightly, but significantly faster, twice as fast solid-state drive speed. Again, the differences here, I think, are probably going to ultimately be pretty minimal, because games that are created for one are going to port to the other, and they're both going to look really good. And so I would say they're going to be pretty similar at the end of the day of what you're going to get performance wise. A couple of analogies I saw said, you know, like the Xbox Series X is more the brute force just powerhouse, where the PlayStation 5 is a little bit sleeker. And so one thing I saw said, like, the Xbox Series X is like a V8, where the PlayStation 5 is like a supercharged V6. They're both going to give you a lot of performance. They just do that in different ways. And I thought that was a good analogy to it. At the end of the day, they're both going to be pretty beefy boxes. And maybe the biggest question at this point, knowing that they're both really beefy boxes, is we don't have any clue how much either one of them is going to cost. And that's knowing that they're both going to be powerhouses, that has me scared.
So here's my deal. You just went through all of that and I didn't say anything. And the reason why is I was trying to figure out where I was going to go when we jumped into this discussion point, because all of those numbers, all of that stuff's cool, but I don't care as much about that as we once did. Like, they're both going to be good, and yes, they're both going to be powerful and do amazing things. The only thing I care about at this point is what software do you have. Like, yep, the whole thing about the solid state drive, like, I heard that, I sat through that whole thing, and they made a huge deal out of it. And I'm thinking to myself, I have an N2 drive sitting on my table in my room waiting on you to come install it. And I have absolutely no idea if, when that's installed, I'm going to be able to tell the difference between that and my Evo that is currently in my system now. It's a huge upgrade speed wise, but on a day-to-day basis, I don't really know if I'm going to be able to tell other than boot up. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with this thing. Like, that's cute, but what's it going to look like on a day-to-day basis? And I don't know that it's going to be that noticeable.
The one thing I think where it will be that I'm hopeful for is A, multitasking, and so just being able to switch between games easily, and then just kind of loads inside of a game, which have become significantly less of an issue over time. But specifically, because I'm still playing Red Dead, I think of the initial load time in Red Dead. Once you get into the game, it's smooth. You don't have to worry about it. But when you fire it up the first time, like from not playing it, so every time I fire it up, if I've played anything else, it takes it, I don't know, man, 3 or 4 minutes to load up. Like, it goes through the little percentage thing that you get, the little revolver icon down at the bottom. And it gets at 90% every time, as, you know, any of these progress things do. And then it stays at 90% for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. And you're just sitting there like, okay, you know, I'm ready to play this game, and it's just hanging out, you know, and that's Red Dead is I think a kind of worst case of modern games in that scenario. I don't see that a ton on other games, but just being able to switch back and forth between games really easily is really appealing to me, because I'm somebody who plays multiple games at the same time, and so just being able to click a button and just switch from one game to the other is going to make me more likely to do that. Whereas right now, like, while I'm playing Red Dead, I don't want to play anything else, because I'm like, man, if I shut down Red Dead and then pull Red Dead back up, it's going to take forever, you know? And so, like, I also want to play Dreams, you know? Like, I've got this other game on my PlayStation now that I'm playing, and I've literally a couple of times was like, man, I'm not going to fire up Red Dead because it's just going to take so long to load. I'm going to move on with my life before it gets done, you know? That's not a huge thing, but it's a nice thing, you know? The stuff that he talked about with how developers approach design because of it, I can't speak into, because not a developer. I've never even really thought in those ways. When he was talking about how developers design maps that are intentionally kind of curvy and winding so that it gives the time for the drive to respond so you can see new areas or whatever, I was like, oh, that's fascinating. I've just never thought about that. You know, like, that's just never been a thought in my mind as a game player. I've just always been like, oh, this is how levels are designed. You know, like, there's some book that's in every video game development school that's like, here, make a curvy corridor to get to the next place. But there's rationale behind that, which makes total sense, you know, just not something you've thought about. And so I think there may be things that we see different in game design that we don't ever credit to this new world of solid states. Again, it's going to be the same for the PlayStation and the Xbox. I don't think the PlayStation is going to have radically different games in that design space. But games are going to feel different because of it. Like, games are going to play different because developers have more freedom with the hardware than they did before, which is exactly what we want in new generations of hardware. And so it's going to push the creative aspect of game development forward. And so it's not just that the graphics get sexier, which is obviously something we're all excited about, but it's also that developers have more space to creatively design and play with the medium. And that's also really exciting.
One thing that I've been thinking about that I don't think that he really touched on is that's a solid state drive, and the major downfall of the solid state drive is you've only got so much data that you can write, so many writes on those drives before they just stop working. And I am overly paranoid with my boot drive. As a matter of fact, I told you I'm playing Mankind Divided. I moved it to a regular hard drive because that's where all the storage space is. And I was moving stuff around, and I didn't want to uninstall it, so I just moved it to a regular hard drive. I've been playing it for 3 days. I haven't moved it back because that's 40 gigs of data that Steam would have to move for the third time. And I know that it's insane to think in this way, but when you're dealing with an 800 and something gig drive that you're constantly going to be swapping software off of, I think there might be a small potential problem there.
I think that's pretty conspiracy-ish. it's not that it's not a thing. It is a thing. But the... At least as far as I know, this is not an area I'm an expert on as much by any means. But from what I've heard, just what I kind of understand about solid-state drives, yeah, that's a potential issue, but it's a potential issue of 10 or 15 years of pretty heavy use or something like that. Again, maybe not quite that long. But it's not something that I think you're at any real risk of wearing the thing down, you know, in 2 years or something like that. That seems unlikely. I mean, I've been working on computers with solid state drives for much more time than that. It's not unfair. I don't think it's probably going to be a major issue.
I think part of the problem is that we don't know what 600 terabytes of writes looks like.
Sure.
I don't even know how you get to that, and that's what a lot of these are rated for. My MacBook is 5 years old, and I'm recording audio on the solid state drive right now as we do the show, and I've never really worried about the Mac, because I'm not moving 40 gigs of data at a time, or 50
sure.
gigs, or 80 gigs, or 100 gig, whatever it is. And so that's the only reason that I kind of wonder about it, because games aren't going to get smaller.
Sure.
You know, that's my only thought.
That's absolutely fair. Yeah, no, that's 100% true. So you are going to be moving, riding big chunks of data. But even then, it would take massive amounts of riding data to start to come up across up to that limit, whatever it is. It's like, I don't know, what is I don't know what the numbers are, but I wouldn't imagine that's going to be an issue we run into anytime soon. By the time you do run into that issue, but they're going to have a new SKU out, or you're going to have a new drive in anyway, or whatever. You know, like, there's going to be other problems. There's going to be other failures with the thing. More than likely, the processor is going to die, or it's going to overheat too much, or whatever. You know, like, there's just so many other things I could see being a potential issue in that amount of time. Then the drive getting worn out. Not that, again, not that it's impossible to happen. I don't see it as a big issue. We'll see. But it is a big component of these new consoles, obviously. So all that said, one more thing that they mentioned in the in that little conference, and then had to kind of come back and clarify, and it's still terribly unclear, was about backwards compatibility. And so we've heard tons and tons, both Sony and Microsoft, talking about that both new rigs are going to be fully backwards compatible with all their generations of titles and on and on. Mark Cerny talked a little bit about the technicals of that and why in the past not all PlayStations have been backwards compatible, of having to have chipsets that match the previous ones or emulate those and the difficulties in that. And that all makes good sense. But he had a line in there that was something to the extent of almost all of the top 100 played games on the PlayStation 4 are anticipated to be fully backwards compatible at the time of launch. And a lot of people heard that and was like, so we're only going to get like 90 games from the PlayStation 4 that are backwards compatible. And he did talk a little bit about there. Some of them are going to have issues. Some of them are going to just have problems of how they perform or whatever, because of the issues of kind of backporting those games. Sony did put out a statement afterward to say they believe, this is the statement here, we believe, so it's not promising anything here, we believe that the overwhelming majority of the 4,000 plus PS4 titles will be playable on PlayStation 5. What that means still, we don't exactly know how they're doing backwards compatibility that's going to create these issues. We don't have a perfect idea of what that's going to mean for any one specific game at this point. honestly, I anticipate when the thing launches, if there's a PlayStation 4 game you want to play on it, you're probably going to be able to play it. But in most part, because it's probably going to be a newer game, and they're definitely going to make sure the newer games work well on that new system. But there are probably going to be some titles that aren't fully backwards compatible, and that shouldn't be terribly surprising, but also is not what we've been hearing out of Sony kind of in the lead up to this.
For one thing, 4,000 PlayStation 4s. Holy crap!
That's what I thought too.
4,000.
How many of those do we honestly want to play?
Like two.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's insane. 4,000.
That's a nuts of a number. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And look. We started this 20 minutes ago, and I said it's about the software. And that, to me, is what does Microsoft do to catch up in that category? Because Microsoft's got some good software, but not like the PlayStation's got. And I know some of the Microsoft guys on the Facebook page, and we've had some of that discussion, but it's not close. And so if you and I are going to buy a Series X, what do we need to see to make that a thing? Because for me, we're going to buy a PlayStation 5 because Sony's always got software. What do I have to see on the Xbox Series X to tell myself that it's worth the $500 or whatever the price tag is going to be?
Yeah, it's a good question. One thing I will say that I think they have a compelling argument with is their service. That Games Pass is just really good. And they've done a really good job with it. And so even though, like, we've always talked about, like, well, I could have a PlayStation or I can have an Xbox, and for all the games that come out on both, if I want the PlayStation games, I can just play the multi-platform games on the PlayStation as well. But the fact that those games often come out on Game Pass much earlier than you're getting access to some of that stuff on PlayStation Plus or whatever at this point, makes that compelling. You know, if there's some software that you won't have to pay out of pocket for that you'll get on Game Pass that you might otherwise pay out of pocket for to play on the PlayStation, outside of the subscription, obviously, and that's the trick of any kind of games as service thing, is that you are paying for it ultimately, but you're not paying additional to what service you're already signed up for or whatever. And so the fact that they've really kind of made a solid game service with Game Pass, I think is it is leading me to a both and as opposed to an either or. I can't see myself not having a PlayStation 5 because, like you said, the games that I really care to play, Sony's got much more of them than Microsoft.
Spider-Man
does,
2, baby.
Yeah, that alone, you know, like it's God of War 2 is in development. You know, like done. Those are games. Last of Us 2 is going to be on PlayStation 4, but if we could play it on PlayStation 5, let's play it on PlayStation 5. You know, like those are games that are just no brainers that are system sellers to me that Microsoft doesn't really have. But if there's a situation where I can have both of them, okay, let's have both of them, you know. Well, let's not have to choose. But that's the if I could only choose one, it's almost assuredly going to be the PlayStation. In this generation where I haven't ever felt the need to have an Xbox One, okay, I think they may compel me in the next generation that I do need to have
both. I think the next generation, I can tell you with almost certainty that for the first time in a long time, we're both going to have both boxes, because sure, we have a podcast with crazy people that pay us to do almost nothing, yes, and we have the money to go do that, and for the first time in a long time, we are in a space where I feel like we're gonna have to have both just to see what's there. I really had no reason to buy an Xbox One. The next one, the Series X, I got to see what the deal is.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the guys that are excited about the Series X are really excited about the Series X. And a lot of it for me is the cloud stuff. Like, does the cloud stuff work as well as Sam is talking about with xCloud? I mean, every time Sam starts gushing about xCloud, I'm thinking, man, it's got to be really good. And I got to see that. So,
Yep. 100%. And that's a really compelling thing. And so to kind of transition from the hardware talk into what's next, as everybody knows at this point, E3 is not happening this year. And we can have a further discussion about whether or not we'll ever see it again at some point. But Microsoft has confirmed that they're going on with their plans, albeit as a digital event, as opposed to a big auditorium conference with lots of people, because probably not going to be wanting to gather lots of people still at that point. But I would imagine at that point, we're going to see a lot of Project xCloud. And I think that's going to be something that they really, really sell this thing on. It is going to be a big, big part of their pitch about what the Series X is. I think much more so than what Sony's doing, because Microsoft has the infrastructure to do it, whereas Sony doesn't. Sony's going to need a partner, be it Microsoft or Amazon or somebody else that has that infrastructure to pull it off. Microsoft's already got it. And so xCloud, I think, will be a lot of what we see. I bet we'll see tons of games and beautiful visuals and all that kind of stuff during that. It feels like Sony probably will wait until after that happens before they do a big, showing off what the PlayStation 5 is. I think there's a chance we'll see the box before then, because that's still one thing we don't have is what the PlayStation 5 box is. There's still that mock-up that's circulating that I see in every article comparing the Xbox Series X to the PlayStation 5. That's that weird V-shaped, just hideous-looking thing. Please, God, Sony, don't make it look like that. That was from a patent a while back or something. But that being said, I would guess we'll see the box at some point, what the physical unit looks like. But I don't think they're going to show off what it can do and those other services and that kind of stuff until they see what Microsoft does. And so Microsoft will be doing that. Devolver Digital is still going to do their thing. God bless them. That'll be a trip. Reportedly, Warner Brothers is going to be debuting a new Batman game, and maybe that Harry Potter thing that's been floating around pretty soon. And so that's supposed to happen sometime in May, I believe. And so GDC has rescheduled for beginning of August. We'll see if that happens. We can hope. All that to say, even though E3 is not happening, I think the summer is going to be pretty chock full of game publishers and announcements and that kind of stuff. Even more so, depending on how long we're all stuck inside our houses, because they have kind of a captive audience at that point. You know, like, we as gamers are going to be kind of dying for news, and we have time to burn. And so give us content that we can go on Twitter and argue about, or whatever. It seems like a wise time to be putting that stuff out.
And the funny thing about E3 being what it is or what it's not this year is that's the next time on my calendar that I know that we may both have coronavirus and we may be like fighting through that, but we will be in the same room together. Well, I can't really say that before that time period, but I know that's what we're doing somehow, some way in June. I think E3 is going to be a lot more about discussion and looking towards the future than it's ever been. And I think we're going to be grateful this year to have hardware to talk about.
Yes.
Because everything else is going to be kind of a downer, I think.
Yeah. I think that's right. I tweeted whenever the news came out, E3 is dead, long live E4. E4 is still going to be a thing. I don't know what it is. We have no clue at this point, but we're doing something. We've got that time, like you said, set aside to talk about games and play games, and so we're going to talk about games and play games. And it may be catching up on stuff that's happening, you know, weeks beforehand in that space as well. But we're going to have stuff to talk about. And honestly, we're going to have stuff to talk about until then, because we're all stuck in our houses. So really quick, a few other things before we wrap up. CD Projekt Red has confirmed that they're planning to start development on the new Witcher title as soon as Cyberpunk 2077 launches. No surprise there. It's not shocking by any means, but my goodness, I'm all about more Witcher, so I'm just happy to hear the news that they're officially going to be working on next-gen Witcher after that. We may be back, too, this one being a rumor, but another potential game announcement. There's a rumor floating around the interwebs right now that there could be a Grand Theft Auto 6 reveal as early as tomorrow. So if that happens... we may be doing another show relatively soon to talk about details of Grand Theft Auto 6, which I would be perfectly happy to do.
Now, Grand Theft Auto is the only thing that will bring Tommy out of his cave and make him stop whatever he's doing to get on the mic and do a show. So I'm excited about that, because you may get multiple hours of us this week.
Yes, which would be fun, and we're going to have to play some games, too. That's the one thing of us being locked in our house. You're going to get more content, because what else do we have to do, you know?
Right.
I'm losing, you know, a couple hours a week at just my commute time, and so I've got a little bit of time to play with now. So this is a cool thing. I won't go into the details of it too much, in part because it gets a little convoluted. But so Dreams, I mentioned Dreams a little bit a while ago, is obviously this big kind of creative community space to make super cool things that right now you can obviously share them within the software. But Sony is actually working to also make it legal and relatively easy to take your creations from Dreams and do other things with them outside of the software, outside of that game world, and do things like merchandise or whatever. Because it's such a... it's so much more than games. Like, even if you go in and play around with Dreams, like, so much of the content that you'll find is, it's not games. Like, people do music videos in there. There's this super high fidelity kind of digital artwork that people are doing in there. Static art that's, you know, not interactive, but it's just mind blowing. You know what these creators are able to do with this engine, with this space. And so Sony making those creations, which they're very clear that you own the IP for anything you create in Dreams already, which is fantastic. But the fact that you can then put that into something else, use that for other worlds, uses in the real world is super cool. So
I said it last time we were on the air. I'll say it again. Somebody's gonna make a whole lot of money on Dreams. Some guy somewhere sitting in his house is about to make some life-changing money because of this software.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is going to be a real showcase for some really creative people who just haven't had that opportunity before, and I love that. One company that's not super happy with Sony over Dreams is Nintendo, because I had mentioned that somebody was recreating Mario 64 in Dreams. Nintendo obviously is very, very protective of their IPs, and so they don't like seeing their products, their characters, their IP used in anything that's not Nintendo. Get that completely. However, I will mention one thing that you can go by the show notes to look at this, because this is one you really have to see. It's pretty cool. Lego and Nintendo are teaming up to make a Mario Lego block set that's really different than, or at least somewhat different than your normal Lego. So it's, first of all, just different size. And so it doesn't, you can't like mix and match it with your normal Lego sets. But it's just these kind of Mario worlds that you can create with this interactive Mario that has like like this little digital face that changes depending on like what you're doing in this little Lego world that you build. And so it's like the inverse of what Dreams is of creating, you know, all this stuff in software. This is taking something that we've always known in software and putting it in the physical world now that you can physically create like Mario levels with Legos. And I don't, it seems real novelty, kind of like Labo was just like this super novelty thing that like you have a lot of fun with for a couple hours and then it lives in your closet like ours does behind me right now. I feel like the Lego Mario may be the same thing, but instead of living in my closet, it would live on my desk because it looks super cool. And so even if I'm not actively playing with it, I just want to have it out because it's cool. It's Legos and it's Mario. What's not to love about that?
I really, if we ever have the chance to go to Japan and can somehow barge our way into Nintendo, I want to know what kind of acid all of those people are taking to come up with this stuff. I mean, it's freaking amazing, this stuff they come up with. And, you know, they're all just tripping out of their minds. And I love it. Like, it's the coolest thing ever. And I'm slightly jealous.
Yep. I hear you there. A couple last things. Final Fantasy VII Remake is still on track, even with coronavirus stuff happening. However, if you were hoping to get a physical release of it as opposed to a digital release of it, you may be waiting a little bit of time. So it's still going to release on April 10th, but they're just warning that it may take time to actually physically manufacture and ship product because of coronavirus. And so if you want the physical one, maybe waiting a little bit. If you want it digital, you'll still get it there. And a lot of people are going to get physical copies on the release date. Same thing I noticed happened with Animal Crossing. My word. Animal Crossing. I just really quick on why this tongue ties me so bad. The word processing, for whatever reason, is just a word that I stumble over a lot. And so in my job, I talk about processing a lot because a bulk of what I do is audio processing. I'm talking about different types of audio processors. And so in my head, I've had to work on saying the word processing a million times. And so now crossing wants to come out of my mouth as processing. So there you go. Apologies that I can't properly say Animal Crossing. Animal Crossing had this issue on Amazon where a lot of people were hoping to get it on Friday on the release date, and Amazon had to postpone shipments because of coronavirus stuff. Again, that's just a reality for a while. Hopefully, we'll be past that soon. Not yet. One last coronavirus thing. If you're stuck in the house and still play World of Warcraft, which lots of people do, World of Warcraft is doing a 100% XP bonus until at least April 20th. And so you get a month of 100% XP bonus if you're locked in the house and playing Warcraft. So some power leveling time there.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's like, hello, welcome back to Warcraft.
That's right. I know. I saw that. I was kind of like, man, I would love to boot that up again. I don't have time for it, but man, I would love to boot it up again. So. Lastly.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, lastly, releases, actually a big week for releases. Doom Eternal is out. Doom Eternal has an 89 Metacritic score. Animal Crossing, like I mentioned, has a 91 Metacritic score. Even on the Switch, if you're wanting to play Doom and only have a Switch, you can't play Doom Eternal. But you can play Doom 64 on the Switch, which also came out this past week. And then Persona 5, which has a 95 on PlayStation 4. Persona, a IP I've never even thought about pulling up, but man, people love it. It's a big deal, and a 95 on Metacritic is pretty mind blowing.
It's on that Monster Hunter level of stuff where you know we really need to play it. I just haven't gotten there.
Yeah. Me too. So good releases out there, and to kind of icing on the cake, one that we're going to talk about a lot in the near future on Steam and only in VR, but the flagship VR game is officially out, which is Half-Life Alyx, and apparently it's great. I've seen really good reviews for it as well, especially for a VR game to be getting. Let me look just really quickly. On Metacritic, it has a 92. So for a VR game to be getting a 92 on Metacritic is a pretty big deal. It's apparently pretty fantastic. So something to look forward to in the near future.
I know we got to wrap, but I want to talk about this just for a second because I texted you this. And I just want to have this discussion. IGN, I stumbled onto an IGN video with Gabe and with another guy on the Alex team. And first of all, holy cow, Gabe looks like Brian Wilson at this point. It's freaking amazing.
Yeah, I hadn't seen him in a while.
Yeah. I saw that and I was like, wow. And then he started talking and what he said kind of bent my brain in pretzels because I had not ever heard this, but the guy that I did asked him, he's like, why did you do this? Why have we not seen Half-Life 3? Why did you choose to do this? And Gabe looked at the guy and he goes, this is the next step. He says, I don't know if you people realize, but it's way easier to plug into somebody's motor cortex and visual cortex than you think it is. And we're a whole lot closer to the Matrix than anybody knows, and this is that thing. And yeah. When Half-Life came out, it changed everything. And then Portal came out and it changed everything. And he looked at the guy straight in the face and said, he didn't actually say this, but he intimated we didn't do Half-Life 3 because we didn't have something that was game-changing, and this is. And so that's why we're doing this, because if you're not working in this space and you're not looking toward the future, you're fixing to be left out because there's going to be a lot of people sitting around in virtual spaces going to concerts and doing various things, and if you're not working in it, you're going to really, really regret it. And one thing I want to ask you about is when you hear him say something like that, and you think about all of the titles that they have had that have literally been industry changing titles, it's a scary thought to me when he says it's not going to be very long and we're all going to get jacked in. Like, he said that and I had to stop and rewind because he basically said, you know, it's just going to be a little while and we're all going to be plugging in. And yeah. And that is so very valve because
yes.
When Half-Life came out, there was nothing like it. Then Portal came out, there was nothing like it. Then Dota came out, there's nothing like it. Now we've got Alex. And I have no idea how good it is. I have no idea if I'm going to like it. All I know is that there's nothing else out there like it. And Valve's doing what Valve does. And that's why they are where they are in the gaming world at this point. Because they only do stuff that moves things forward. And I just wonder, for you, when you hear something like that, what do you think?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought it up because it's fascinating. And Gabe is one of those people that, you know, when he talks about stuff like this, even though Gabe's always been a little bit crazy, like he's also been genius, you know, his entire career. So it does kind of perk your ears up. Living in the moment we're living in right now, where like people are just coming to the reality of having to be locked in their homes. And when you play out scenarios of like super apocalyptic things that could happen in the not so distant future, be it pandemic, which we're living through right now, or a climate crisis or whatever, like the idea of being able to, you know, jack into a virtual world is making more and more sense, right? like it feels weird. It feels super sci-fi to talk about. We're obviously not in that place at this point. But he's not the only one thinking about it. You know, like he's in the game world, I think, going to be a prominent voice for that. But like the idea of the singularity is near, is feeling more and more real all the time. And so, yeah, I Valve absolutely sees an opportunity here. It is fascinating to me that they decided to do this big, deep VR title with their IP that's, you know, so beloved and has been out of sight for so long that the reboot is VR means that they care a lot about VR. That where, like, I was even thinking when we were talking about Microsoft and Sony a little while ago, you know, obviously Sony brought up PlayStation VR. Mark Cerny did a little bit in his presentation, specifically around the audio, and that's great, and there's a lot of fascinating stuff with audio and VR and whatever, but they didn't spend a ton of time talking about, you know, what the processing, the graphics power was going to do to VR for and that kind of stuff, and Microsoft hasn't really talked about VR at all, and in part because it's still not commercially like a massive thing, but it is a thing that is still going to exist for the foreseeable future, and it's just going to get more robust and more interactive, and is going to be a bigger and bigger deal. Valve sees that, I think, wisely, and is going to make themselves a big player in that world, not just in hardware, which we've already seen them doing the Valve Index, but also in that content space as well, and that's going to easily get outside of just the world of gaming really, really quickly.
And just real quick, a lot of it has to do with customer service, because I've been meaning to write an email this week, but in the middle of this interview, they're talking about Half-Life Alyx, and they're talking about what people are saying, all this, and Gabe, which Gabe does, I give him credit, we're on a Valve mailing list because I sent Gabe an email and he's like, yeah, I don't have time to talk to you, but here, during this interview, he gave his email address out again, and said, I spend a good portion of my time answering email. I want to talk to you. I want to know what you guys are thinking that are playing this, what can we change, what can we adjust? And the first thing that I thought was, this is the guy that we need to be emailing about Copilot. It's that guy. And I've been meaning to sit down this week and write an email and just say, hey, I'm a handicapped guy. I can't use the controllers. I can't play this game, and it's killing me because I love Half-Life, but I haven't gotten it done. But I think that's what's gonna give them a bigger foothold than anybody else, because they know it's about their customers. He knows it, and if I write an email this week and start a discussion, which I doubt that'll happen, but if it does, they're the one group out there that I feel like knows it's about the customers and they will listen, you know? And that's a huge deal.
Yeah, for sure. And that's part of the success of Steam, which is mind blowing what it's become. And so yeah, they have leverage that they can lean on for that. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's a good topic.
And that being said, we need to wrap up because we are way over. He's got a little girl in the other room that's gonna bust through the door any second. Because this is probably the longest she's gone without her daddy in a while. So, all of that being said, y'all know where the Facebook page is. Y'all know where the Twitter is. The Twitter is vastly entertaining. I think Tommy may be better at Twitter than any other social media out there.
That's 100% true. That's a low bar, but it's true.
It's really fun. It's really entertaining. There's lots of discussion going on the Facebook page. Sam was talking about, guys, I'm really sorry I'm posting so much. I'm stuck in my house. I did not tell him, but Sam, keep posting.
100%.
Because if you're posting, that means we don't have to. So go crazy with that, man. I love what you're posting over there. I love that we have this discussion space going on. Please, 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 if you're sitting in your house, you're bored, and you want to talk about something, the Gaming Uncensored Facebook group is the place to do that.
Yeah.
So definitely check that out. Of course, we want to hear from you, and we have a voicemail line just for that. And that number is
509-GAME-210.
And other than that, I think that is pretty much everything. Is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
You may see us tomorrow if Grand Theft Auto 6 is happening. I think Tommy may be looking for his needle and some ink. At this point, I see a Grand Theft Auto tattoo happening shortly. I'm looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to doing some more content. If we got to be locked in our houses, at least we got something to do. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Jamie, that's Tommy, and for one more week, we are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gamingUncensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.